Well, good morning, everybody. It's right at 10:30, according to my phone, so I think we'll get started because we have a number of great presentations and want to try to keep on time. So my name is Gus Burkhead. This is the session which somebody humorously titled Glacier Thawing of Antimicrobial Resistance Surveillance. So I pondered that. Someone with a sense of humor, I guess, gave us that title. And I guess it's somebody subtly trying to send us a message we need to move faster in antimicrobial resistance surveillance, which we certainly want to do. But I'm not sure it's really politically correct to push for speeding up glacier melting. I thought we were trying to go in the other direction on glaciers. So, but nonetheless, we will try to cover some issues around antimicrobial resistance surveillance. I think we have the best meeting room in the facility because we have windows and you can look out upon the glaciers which are melting, and hopefully we'll enjoy it. So. Again, by way of introduction, my name's Gus Burkhead. I worked for a number of years at the New York State Health Department, retired recently, and have been consulting with CSTE on the subject of our first presentation, which is the CDC CSTE Antimicrobial Resistance Surveillance Task Force, and I'm going to give an update on that task force and its activities today. This grew out of a 2013 CSTE position statement, really highlighting that the U.S. lacks a comprehensive antimicrobial resistance surveillance strategy, a strategy that would provide surveillance data for early detection of new and emerging forms of resistance, monitor the spread of resistance over time, measure the burden of infection, and look at the microbiological characterization of resistant pathogens. All these would be the goals of a comprehensive surveillance system. And so the position statement laid out the goal to really identify, develop, and put into practice scientific, technological, and policy solutions to strengthen antimicrobial resistance surveillance in the U.S. And the task force hasn't actually formed yet. As you'll see, we have had a working group, a core working group that's been in the planning stages, but we anticipate that it would involve members from CSTE, CDC, other government agencies, private sector organizations, including commercial labs and the infectious disease community. And there are resources being devoted to this, and that's one of the reasons why I'm here. So the objectives laid out for the task force were really to define at the federal, state, and local level what the surveillance responsibilities are. There's a specific issue around suppression of antimicrobial susceptibility results from some kinds of lab instruments, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. We want to also be sure that electronic lab reporting meets the needs both of communicable disease, traditional programs, as well as AR surveillance needs and in facilities through the NHSN system. So ELR is the feeder of a lot of data that is for surveillance purposes. We want to take advantage of the microbiology infrastructure that's out there and particularly address changes in diagnostic technology as we go more to culture-independent methods that may threaten our ability to track some forms of antimicrobial resistance if cultures and susceptibilities aren't being done. We want to leverage public-private partnerships and particularly, and we haven't really gotten into this yet, but look at models for communicating antimicrobial resistance data to practitioners, policymakers, and the public and really inform antibiotic stewardship programs in the process. So I mentioned the task force hasn't actually been constituted, but we've had a core planning group, many of who are in the room today. I've sort of been chairing the effort, but Nicole Bryan with CSTE has been our chief staffer. Jeff Engel, the executive director of CSTE, has participated actively in this, which I think indicates the level of interest in this from CSTE's point of view. And then from CDC, Michael Iadomarco, who is not here today, but is the director of CSELS, the Center for Surveillance Epi and Lab Services at CDC. Again, a very highly placed individual at CDC, indicating the level of interest. Marion Kaner has been very actively involved and, in fact, was the lead author on the position statement. So Marion has been active in this area for a number of years and really pushing, I think, the agenda from the state health department point of view. Wes Kennemore is in the room sitting over here as a consultant, formerly worked with APHL, and Wes has been very active on the task force. Dan Pollack sitting here, I think also extremely active from the Division of Healthcare Quality and Promotion at CDC. Dan is really, I think, driving this from my perspective, from CDC's point of view, and has been the provider of the funds to help with this activity. And then Dawn Sievert, who may be here in the room. Oh, there you are. You're hiding, Dawn. Also a consultant with the project working with CDC. So this has been the core group, what we've been doing for the last 6 months, really, is to do information gathering, trying to get the lay of the land and really be sure that we understand what our focus is. And what we, I think, are going to focus on primarily is healthcare-associated infections and focus particularly on CRE, although we hope that the work that we do and the lessons we learn will be able to be shared with other areas of public health where antimicrobial resistance is important, for example, in the foodborne respiratory, TB, STD, and HIV areas. At least what we do, we hope, will inform and will be informed by those other areas. We're really want to focus on developing an overall strategic plan that would lay out the purposes of surveillance. And once you've established what your purposes are, what the data needs are, and then when you understand what your data needs are, what the methods would be to collect those data. So that's the overall arching framework here, I think. And in the process, define the roles and responsibilities of the federal level, the state level, and the local level for AR surveillance. Define the capacities and the resources that are needed to meet those responsibilities. And really, I think also, as I mentioned, promote a common infrastructure to support electronic lab reporting, both for communicable disease, traditional communicable disease programs and public health departments, as well as the NHSN system, which is also a very important piece of the surveillance that we do, and avoid the need for duplicative reporting of lab results. I think the primary surveillance methods that we've focused on are the NHSN system, which is already collecting data on antimicrobial resistance and CRE, or it has the capacity to do that, and state reportable disease surveillance systems. So this is kind of the two models of surveillance that we're looking at. And there's actually a third model in here, which I'll mention, which is the actual collection of isolates by state laboratories. And that could be viewed, I think, also as a method of surveillance, but also provides important additional information about the mechanism of resistance, which is very important for tracking this. So this is what the core group has been focusing on. We've had calls with a number of you in the states. I see a number of people in the audience who we've spoken with to understand your perspective, and we've also talked with subject matter experts within and without CDC to try and get the lay of the land for this process. I mentioned the ultimate goal is to develop a strategic plan. I think in doing that, the view that we've sort of taken to this process is that we'd like to define what the current state is now of surveillance for antimicrobial resistance, and then really try to define what the desired state is, and then identify the gaps between the two, from there then determine, once we have that plan and identifying the gaps, to determine how we address those and go forward to implement a plan. So the idea is not to end up with a strategic plan that sits on the shelf, but one that actually drives where we're going. And in the process, as we learn things, to get some projects going even in advance of a final plan. To define the desired state, I think, as I mentioned, we start with what is the purpose of doing surveillance. And this, for any of you who've worked on a CSD position statement to make a disease reportable, for example, you start with what's the purpose? Why are you collecting the data? And then determine the best methods to collect it, define the roles and responsibilities of federal, state, and local, as I mentioned, and the capacities and the gaps and the barriers. So this is sort of our conceptual framework for the work that this core group has been doing to try and set up to actually move forward with a full strategic planning activity. So more specifically, the core planning group has helped, and actually CSDE did this the CDC, I guess, can't do surveys without OMB approval, so we're safe. CSDE did a survey of states on CRE surveillance, and we got 100% response, and I'll share some of the results from that, sort of looking at what is the current state. We've also done fact-finding calls, as I mentioned, with CDC and national subject matter experts. We've talked to many states and big cities, and I'll summarize those information. And then we've tried to tackle some very specific issues which we think are going to be barriers. And one is the particular challenges of electronic lab reporting for CRE specifically, and also define the challenges in the NHSN world for doing surveillance for CRE. And then, as I mentioned, this is particular issue around selective reporting of antibiotic susceptibility. So I'll give you a brief outline of all three of those, and then we have been in the process of drafting some background documents, and I'll just share a little bit about those, but looking at the purposes and methods of CRE surveillance, the roles and responsibilities and core capacities needed, and the comparison, head-to-head sort of comparison of reportable disease versus NHSN-based surveillance as being two of the primary methods that we're looking at. So just very quickly, the CSDE survey was sent out in April to the state HAI coordinators. We got a 100% response rate from the 50 states and the two large territories. Well, D.C., I guess, is unique to itself, not a territory. But CRE as a reportable disease, 40 different respondents indicated that they were thinking about CRE. Either 24 already had it reportable as a reportable disease in at least one setting, and 16 plan to make it reportable in at least one setting within the next year or two. So actually, that's a very high proportion, I think, of states that are already moving forward with some sort of a reportable disease model of surveillance, which is the traditional approach that we take. We also asked how many states were utilizing NHSN data from the MDRO lab ID event module. And four states currently require reporting of CRE by their hospitals, I think in most cases, in at least one setting, but I think mostly hospitals, and one has plans to do so. This year, nine additional states indicated they had plans to do so in the future. So again, I think a significant number, smaller but significant number of states thinking about how to use NHSN. We didn't ask which states were voluntarily getting access to these data from facilities in their states, but I think many states, I saw a presentation on Saturday of the NHSN, so many states have access through MOUs or agreements with their facilities and may be able to access if the facilities are entering data into the module. So the overall take-home message I took from this was that states are thinking and moving in the direction, two directions potentially, to look at surveillance, and we'll talk more about the types of approaches going forward. We did have calls with seven states and three big cities, and again, thank you in the room if you were involved. I've listed them at the bottom. And what we found was that there are a variety of approaches. Some states, at least one state, has mandated isolate submission for all CRE isolates, and that's the form of surveillance that they're undertaking. Others have mandated reporting either by ELR or paper or whatever method their lab reporting occurs in. One state, Illinois, has an XDR registry that they populate with these data. So there are different approaches, I think, being taken. And a few states mandate use of the MDRO module within NHSN. I think we did find common issues, however, across the states, resource needs, and this survey was done pre the new ELC funding, so the resource issue may be alleviated a little bit, but I think in many states it's one or two people that are doing this work, and particularly if you're going to intervene and go out and collect additional information and work with facilities, it may require more resources than that. ELR issues, I think, abound not just in this area but across communicable disease surveillance, and lack of full participation by labs, and then lack of a single standard. There are HL7 standards for CRE that we think are adequate, but there are multiple different formats that could be used, and labs are doing all kinds of different things in terms of reporting, which makes it a challenge. So in terms of the potential AR surveillance approaches that we've sort of identified through this work, I think there are three sort of tracks that we might think about in terms of surveillance. On the upper left, sort of the traditional disease reporting that we're used to in public health, based primarily on electronic lab reporting, or lab reporting, hopefully electronic, because that's really the only way to confirm a case or have a suspect case that you could work at further. Down at the bottom, the NHSN model, which provides very valuable information and is a well-developed system. And we'll talk about the pros and the cons of these different approaches. And then I think the third, which I hadn't really appreciated when I came into this, but do more, is that in the upper right, that isolate submission to state labs, at which the ELC funding will help promote, is probably a very important leg of this because of the need for to actually confirm the mechanism of resistance before you to fully understand the data that you have and know which ones you need to go out and respond to. So there are really three different tracks here of data coming in, and of course the challenge is how do we get all these tracks sort of together, and you don't want to have two trains hitting the switch at the same time and having a train wreck. So it's a challenge, and sort of the analogy is to how to pull these data and look at the strengths and weaknesses and the issues of getting data in these three areas. And I sort of think of it as a three-legged stool that you may need to have think about data in all three areas to really have a comprehensive system in your state or jurisdiction. So some of the issues that we've identified, challenges with lab reporting around CRE in particular. And I think for those of us who've worked in communicable disease for many years, lab reporting is really the bread and butter of how we do surveillance and get data in. It's really the best method for population-based surveillance. However, reporting requirements may differ from state to state. Many states can't require reporting from their out-of-state labs, so that's an issue. How do you get complete reporting when samples are going all over the country, potentially? The labs, so in my long experience, the lab data is often lacking a lot of the information that we need, and so you need to go back to the provider to get that because the labs may not have all that needed information, even demographics, patient location, other things that you would like to have. At this point, hopefully labs and health departments are coalescing around the 2015 CSTE CRE case definition. That's important to have clear what it is you want reported, but that there may be more work that needs to be done there. And not all labs in many states can do electronic lab reporting, particularly smaller labs, so paper reports are still happening. As I mentioned, electronic lab reporting can mean lots of things, different things to different people. It may vary. There are various structured HL7 type messages. In some instances, labs may be sending ASCII files or just a PDF of the lab report electronically, so that may be electronic lab reporting, but it's not really any different than a paper report. You still need a staff person to sit down and enter that into your system. So lots of variability. Some labs may not be using the current HL7 version, and I think we've discovered that the current HL7 2.5.1 has at least four valid ways in which to package CRE results, including the use of an open text field to just put the lab results in, which can't really be machine processed. It needs to, again, have human intervention to ingest those data. HL7 reports may be missing information, missing fields, or they may have syntax and semantic errors in them, the wrong coding, for example, that needs to be looked at. There's a particular issue around updating a record because a single isolate in the lab may have multiple tests done at different times and the record needs to be updated, but unless you're using the snapshot mode, and I'm not an HL7 expert, but unless you're using that, the previous result may get overwritten. And you lose that, and you have the more recent result, but you've lost the earlier result in the process. So there's a really attention to the protocol and the process for the reporting is very important. And going forward, I think states need to work intensively, will need to work intensively with each lab to get them up to a single HL7 format that can be machine processed by public health. In the NHSN world, I think we've also looked at this pretty intensively. It's really the best method probably at this point for facility-specific reporting, but currently is limited, as you know, to hospitals and long-term care. Not all hospitals, unless there's a mandate in the state, may be entering data into the MDRO lab ID event module, or hopefully in the future, the antibiotic use and resistance module, which is a fully electronic means of collecting the data. So we're moving in that direction, but not there yet. And many states' health departments may not have the capacity or their permission to actually access those data, but they're probably very valuable data to think about trying to access. The data are entered and submitted, I think, monthly in NHSN, so may not be as timely if you're trying to get an early warning of a cluster issue or a unique event that you're interested in focusing on. And I think in the future developments, as I mentioned, it's going to be very important to expand the use of the AUR module. Will provide a lot more information. And states, if you don't have a mandate, there is a way to get access to the data through DUA agreements with the facilities. I mentioned this specific issue of selective reporting of antimicrobial susceptibility data. And this is really an issue that is brought about by using the CLSI guidelines for reporting the results to clinical settings. And so some of the information from the testing devices in labs may not be sent forward to the clinical setting or to public health if you're trying to, or NHSN if you're trying to pull those data off. And the goal of it is really to promote optimal antibiotic ordering. So carbapenem sensitivity results may not be transmitted to the clinician, for example, if the organism is susceptible to one or more appropriate first-line drugs. So you've lost the carbapenem information about that isolate. It's not actually in the data stream that comes through. And the result is it's lost both to the infection control and stewardship efforts as well as to public health as part of a comprehensive system. So the solution, I think, on that one is we're, and under Dr. Michael Idemarco's lead, going to work with the CLIAC, the advisory committee at CDC, which deals with CLIA, includes actually FDA and CMS as well, and also with CLSI to really highlight this issue and see if there's a way that we can get around this, with the goal of which, as I mentioned, was to really promote optimal antibiotic ordering, but is an unanticipated side effect is that the data aren't available. I mentioned we are working on some documents. So just for example, if you want to look at the purposes and methods of surveillance, if you feel you need rapid identification of emerging strains or outbreaks in your state, probably some kind of either universal lab isolate submission and or electronic lab reporting is what you would need to achieve that purpose. If you're going to take public health action based on cases, for example, to go to facilities and assure that appropriate infection control is being taken, again, you need a rapid mechanism to identify those cases and which ones you're going to follow up on. If, however, your purpose was to monitor facility-based rates over time, NHSN might be a better approach. It's much less labor-intensive, obviously, for the health department because the hospitals are doing the work of collecting the data. So that method might be better for that particular purpose. At some point, the ability to create aggregate national statistics and look at patterns around the country, the question is whether national notification might be a way to go or NHSN for all cases that would give you the facility-based cases only around the country. So depending on the purpose, the method, that may determine the method that you're looking at. In terms of the roles, obviously the state health department role and the local role has always been rapid identification of important, potentially novel strains or clusters and public health action taken based on those reports. Many states can provide technical assistance to facilities, and in some instances, the Illinois model, for example, interfacility notification of positive CRE patients. And states do monitor trends over time. At the federal level, the roles, and this is just examples that we haven't settled on this, but I think it helped guide the discussion. At the federal level, to compile data on national trends and patterns, provide guidance to states and locals, and importantly, the resources. I think much of the resources supporting this effort will be federal resources. So the next steps with this group we're going to continue with the fact-finding. We're going to, I think, look to enlarge our core planning group potentially with subject matter experts and engage other groups as appropriate. For example, the CLIAC is being engaged on the selective reporting issue I mentioned. And other CSD committees are looking at ELR and HL7 issues, so we're not going to reinvent the wheel. I think we'll try to figure out who all we can involve in this effort. At some point, we will designate task force members, and we'll work through CSTE leadership to do that for among the CSTE members, and look to have an in-person meeting in the winter or spring to really try to hammer out a strategic plan. We'd like to have a full draft to share with people before we bring that meeting together. And the goal, obviously, to have a strategic roadmap that identifies the things which I've mentioned. That's really an update on where we are. I wanted to highlight for people that right after this session at 12:30, We're going to have a roundtable luncheon down in the center here in the main exhibit hall where we want to have discussion. And these are some of the questions that we'd like to discuss. We'll hand these out again at the session. And I realize 12:30 is quick in terms of getting lunch. I think we just wanted to give as much time for discussion as we could, so feel free to get lunch and come back. If you're not right there at 12:30, it's not a problem. We really want to have a discussion and hear from you all. So I think in the interest of moving along, I won't take questions now, but if you have questions, you can approach me or any of the task force members, or come. I would encourage you to come to the lunch roundtable, and we can really have a fuller discussion of these issues which I've laid out here.
Yes, so the question was about, do we know the source of the meat? We do have that data. The NARMS retail meat study collects that information. And for the most part, it's domestically produced. Some of our enteric infections that are resistant are also imported, there's more resistance in some other countries.
Yeah. Thank you. So before we close, I realize that at the end of my presentation, I failed to show the acknowledgement slide for the Antimicrobial Resistance Task Force work. So these are all the people. I hope that I've got everybody that we interviewed by phone or has been involved with the work so far. So again, thank you. And then just a reminder, starting at 12:30 or as soon as you can get there with lunch, we're going to be meeting for a roundtable discussion of the Resistance Task Force work down. It's in here in this building in the main area in section one of the main exhibit hall. So we'll have to see where that is. But I'd encourage you to go get exhibit hall here in this building downstairs where the coffee is and such. But they're going to have it set up for roundtable discussions starting at 12:30, and as soon as people can grab a bite to eat and come back there, we'd love to go through, and I'll just leave you with some of the questions that we would like to discuss at the lunch, including wanting to get input from people on whether we should move next year for national notifiability for CRE at CSTE. Thanks again.